This is Crowder. I don't know if you know these guys or not. They're amazing. We saw them on the main stage here. Was that where we saw them? Or no. We saw them at the Cumberland County Fairgrounds with Franklin Graham. That's right. Well done, Didi. Amazing. It's an incredible video that goes with this. You ought to look it up. David Crowder, Angels We Have Heard on High. One of my favorites. I think this is what you call make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Crowder, getting it done. 7:06, you're listening to 100.5 FM. We're broadcasting live from the RowAutoGroup.com studio. Don't forget, our McVetty's Hearth and Home text line is 207-409-6172. You can find out more at stovesofmaine.com. Mike Shepard is the political editor for the Bangor Daily News, and he joins us now. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Ray.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. You sound great. Yeah. Sound all chipper, Mike Shepard. Are you chipper?
That's right. That's what happens when the legislature comes back to town, right?
Oh, yes. That's such an exciting thing for everyone. We all rejoice. What did Mark Twain, or was it Will Rogers? I don't recall which said, "The legislature is gone. The people are safe again." We're not safe for a while now. They're about to be there for, well, depending on how well the legislature's run, you hope a little better, because Ryan Fecteau certainly has some experience having been the speaker previously. Hopefully they'll run it well and get out by the middle of June as it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's what we all hope, right? Especially when it gets to June.
That's what I mean. You know, I frankly wish they were supposed to adjourn January 5th, but that's just an opinion.
No, they get a lot done. They did. You know, they do the work and the time allotted, right? And just like we did in school, I think that it would lead to a lot less downtime, right? In January and February, if that were the case.
You know, my dear old daddy said, water rises to its own level. As far as I'm concerned, this legislature has been a drought.
They just got seated, right? Give them time.
I did give them time. I did. I really did. I really did. Hey, I know you don't work for the Washington Post. I understand all of that. I just want to ask you a question.
I do not.
Does this seem hypocritical? Let me ask you that question. Does this seem hypocritical? So when Joe Biden awarded a Bronze Star to an intelligence analyst, the Washington Post called it one of the Army's most prestigious awards. But when it came to light that Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth had earned two Bronze Stars, the Washington Post said, well, actually, they're really pretty common. Does that seem weird to you? Does it seem inconsistent to you?
I don't know. I don't know a ton about the Bronze Star. I don't know. I haven't read the stories. I've been pretty out of the loop on national news this week. So
yeah, I bet you have with the Austin Terrio Jared Golden recount.
I was sick for 2 days too, so I've just kind of been laying low. But yeah, no, the third victory, right, for Jared Golden in that race. But no, I don't really have much to say about it. Right? I haven't been following the...
Just a little. Wouldn't you say, though, just as a human or as a citizen, that's just because they don't like the boy, you know, that sort of diminished? Do you know the name Joe Concha? He's a commentator around the country. Joe Concha has said that everyone who serves in the military should immediately cancel their subscription to the Washington Post for being so disrespectful to someone who's been awarded the Bronze Star. But I digress, Mike. I digress. So you're feeling better now, obviously. I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think the eager anticipation of appearing on my show must have really brightened your spirit.
That's right. It's a corpse reviver. That's right.
That's what I figured. Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah. It's like an elixir, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really is. So, Jared Golden, Austin Terrio, that race is final. And Austin, correct me if I'm wrong, but Austin, and I did speak to him briefly the other day, and he was getting on an airplane, but he stopped the recount before it was completed because it was obvious.
Yeah, they were looking at just a few towns. And I mean, you know, we called this, I think we called this the Wednesday after the election. And once those overseas ballots came in, I mean, the writing was on the wall here. At that point, it would have taken just such a massive counting. And I think people have to realize that even a close race is not all that close, right? When you're in like the 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 votes, it takes a really big error to go back and wipe an edge like that out. So this was always a likely outcome. I think what's interesting here, right, is it's kind of funny, but Austin Terrio, I think, is almost the front runner for that seat going into 2026. We think Jared Golden's going to run for governor,
right?
Or maybe some sort of higher office if something unexpected happens. So I almost think going into 2026, his place in Maine politics is one of the most entrenched, believe it or not, which is a funny thing to say after a loss. But nonetheless, I think it's true.
Well, you know, he ran a good race. He ran a very competitive race, and I think the two guys comported themselves well. You know, there was a little spat here, there, and yonder, but it wasn't what we see in a lot of places. So I think they comported themselves well, and Austin's a fine young man, and Jared is a formidable opponent. I say this to people all the time, and I know they get upset about it because Jared said some things about this or that or the other, but he's a Marine, for God's sakes. You know, Jared understands things that a lot of people who aren't Marines don't understand. So we knew this was a tough race. It was made easier, obviously, by the presence of Donald Trump in that district. But, you know, I got that one completely wrong. I got Trump's race completely right. 312, I said he would win the aggregate vote. I got that completely right. I had no doubt about that. But I said if Trump wins CD2 by 3 or 4 points, Jared loses. If he wins by 6 or 7, Jared wins. Austin.
Yeah,
Austin. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if he wins it by 6 or 7, Austin wins. And what did he win by, 8?
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think we got pretty close on the air, Ray. I mean, I think that I was in the posture of like 6, 7, 8. And we'll have to check the tape on that. That Jared could maybe withstand it. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is the trend that we saw with Susan Collins in 2020, in this year. I mean, I think that people are really still underrating, right, the fact that Mainers are a little unique, right? They're not just going to vote straight ticket all the time. And we're going to, you know, we'll see if that stands the test of time, obviously. We're seeing, you know, the legislature now more segregated by geography, right, than it really has ever been. But you know, certainly it's a trend that's going in the other direction. But Jared Golden, Susan Collins have shown that we still really like to split our tickets, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon, unless we, you know, nominate candidates who aren't terribly unique. And if as long as we continue to do that, I think we're going to continue to see that.
Yeah, you know, it is a fascinating thing because people that voted for Donald John Trump voted for him for real change. Wanted, you know, no matter what you think of Donald Trump, and you know I'm a big supporter, but no matter what a person thinks of Donald Trump, those that voted for him are tired of the way things are and want them to be not uniquely different, but vastly different. And then some of those people obviously voted for Jared Golden and may have even voted for Angus King, two people who won't go to Washington and support Trump's reform agenda. Jared may to some degree, but Angus King is a more reliable vote than any Democrat in the United States Senate. And that's what he's demonstrated over time. So Angus King will be there to oppose Donald Trump every step of the way. So if you voted for Donald John Trump to reform the government, why in the world would you vote for Angus King and Jared Golden to oppose him every step of the way? It is a unique main thing.
Well, I mean, you can't argue with the voters, right? And it's the same phenomenon that we see when we see approval polls of Congress, and then the fact that every incumbent, you know, incumbents get elected at, what, a 95 or higher percent clip. you know, it's just people like their congressman or their member of Congress, but they don't necessarily like Congress. And I think it's the same thing you see. It's a much different argument to kick an incumbent member of Congress out, you know, than it is to elect a president. And this time
I agree with you there. But this election was obviously different. We all know that. Everybody said Trump couldn't win. And then Kamala brought on the campaign of joy and momentum and all this other stuff. And Democrats were energized. Yeah.
She was the underdog by the end of the race.
There's no question. I never doubted. With the day that she was selected, I said, she's the shiny new penny, and everyone will gravitate to her, as we all do to shiny new pennies. But here's the thing about shiny new pennies. You can go back and probably said it 100 times. Shiny new pennies tarnish. And I knew she would. The problem that Democrats had with Harris was very simple. Joe Biden stepped out of the race, or was pushed out of the race, or was tripped down the stairs, or whatever it was that happened to him. Too early. For 100 days without a pandemic, you couldn't hide her, and that's ultimately what happened here. But my only point was, uniquely in this race, and I don't mean to be vulgar when I say what I'm about to say, but people tell me this all the time, not just in Maine, but all over the country, that Donald Trump is their middle finger to the federal government. And then to turn around and on the same ballot, in the same race, support two people in this state who certainly are not allies, and in the case of Angus King, will be as oppositional as anyone can be to what Donald Trump is going to do. It just it makes no sense. Why would you want one guy to go down and change everything and then send two people who will fight him every step of the way to ensure that he doesn't change everything? It's just
I think that assumes, Ray, that every Donald Trump voter has the same. I think there were plenty of voters, right, who weren't enthralled about the prospect of Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. They're picking maybe what they choose as the least best option. And I'm not saying that's the majority of them, right? But I think it could be 5, 8, 10%. And not every Donald Trump voter is a Donald Trump enthusiast, right?
No. I get that.
Candidate. So yeah. I think that's part of the story here too, that it might be ignored.
But, well, you know, I will say Trump's a little unique in that regard. I do agree with you. Not every Donald Trump voter was a Donald Trump enthusiast like I am. But uniquely, that number for Trump is much smaller than it would be in a normal race.
That's true. He has high identification with
People that support Trump vigorously support Trump. So, you know, but I mean, I've always said part of what I love about Maine is unique nature, not just the unique scenic beauty and the kind, generous people, but also Maine is a unique state politically. It always has been, and it remains so. And I will say, you know, I thought Jared was going to be tough to beat, but I really believed if Trump won by 6 or 7, Austin would win that race, and he simply did not. And what's interesting, most interesting, is in some of the races around the country where that situation might have occurred, Donald Trump did not endorse the candidate. Trump was full-throated on behalf of Austin Terrio.
And not late either. I mean, this was back well before the primary.
Well, and Austin may have won the primary anyhow, but this sealed the primary. He won big in the primary because of Trump's support. So, yeah, unique situation. Were you there and able to observe, or were you sick during that time when the recount was going on?
I mean, we didn't really pay much attention to the recount, to be honest with you. I mean, we didn't really see much of an opportunity for votes to move. So, you know, we just followed it kind of remotely. But I don't know if you can answer this question.
Austin was getting on a plane, so I didn't have a chance to really talk to him too much. But typically in a 400,000 vote race, you might see 5,000, maybe 5,500 blank ballots. There were 12,600 that were blank. What really became of those ballots? You know, because my question was, were they actually blank? Or, you know, people don't pay attention. Did they put an X? Did they put a check mark? Did they put a dot? Didn't fill in the circle? What became of those ballots? That's where I thought he might mine some gold.
It's all anecdotal, right? Because we don't see every – the problem with, you know, it would be great if we could look at all the ballots, even anonymously, right, to see if that person who blanked the congressional race, right, voted for Kamala Harris, voted for Donald Trump. Anecdotally, what I heard from people who looked at the ballots, you know, who are on the ballot counting teams or know people who were, was that a lot of those blank ballots were Kamala Harris voters who may have been frustrated with Golden and just blanked the ballot. Now, clearly wasn't enough to, you know, change the outcome. I guess it would be a very different story if the votes landed slightly differently.
Well, no, but my question was, what happened to those? There were 12,600 ballots, according to Secretary of State's office, that simply no one voted. The machine was unable. What happened to those? I mean,
well, those were true. So most of those were true blanks, right? I think it was something in the vicinity of, you know, I've reported the total somewhere, but it's somewhere in the vicinity of like 10% of them, right, actually had second choices on them. So they had a blank first choice and those second choice ballots, you know, that broke overwhelmingly for Golden. So that's what ended up pushing him over the top. So, you know, minus out the, I think it was 1700, 1800. Don't quote me on that. Go back and read the story.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But you know, the rest of those ballots were just true blanks that dropped out of the total in the end.
So I guess you may have answered it, and I just didn't understand your answer. So of those ballots, those 12,600 ballots, you're saying that they were truly blank on the first round. There were not, like, checks or X's.
Well,
they
were blank everywhere. They're blank everywhere. They were blank, you know, they were blank on the congressional race all the way around. So no first choices, no second choices, no nothing.
Wow. I mean, that is a much larger – that's an anomaly.
With a
race that high. Again, I've gone back and done the homework. It's typically 5,000, 5,500 maybe. 5,500 really being the high end on a 400,000 vote race.
It's pretty high.
This one with this much juice in it. You know, this was not you know, a docile race. This was a hotly contested race from you know, Santa Monica to Eastport. And
It's pretty high. Yeah. I mean, we were going, but when we were making a decision about whether to call the race, we went back, right, and we looked at the history of blank ballots in these races and how many, you know, just to figure out, okay, what can we expect when those blank ballots come out. And I think in one of Jared Golden's races, 5% of ballots were blanked. I think there was another one where there was 8% of ballots were blanked. This would be slightly higher, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the phenomenon of, you know, kind of liberal frustration with Golden was real, but not as strong as, you know, some voices might have you think. He obviously countervailed that, right, with strong swing support, so it didn't end up being an issue. But man, oh man, if that were a 200 vote margin with Kerrio ahead, we would be talking about a totally different story.
Yeah, right, sure, of course.
So, you know, you resimulate this race and you know, we could be having a very different conversation. So yeah. I think it's, you know, you look at all these things and they become kind of secondary or tertiary themes of a race, but it could have been a big deal for sure.
You sort of glossed over what you said, but you said that Jared Golden is widely rumored to be running for governor or maybe some other higher office if things change. Was that just more of a throwaway sentence, or is there a...
No, I mean, I think, you know, you got to look at him running for governor first things first.
Sure, now, of course.
I think the unexpected thing, right, would be if Donald Trump turns on Susan Collins, right? Or, you know, not something that I necessarily expect now, but I think it's a theme worth watching. So if there was a primary challenge to Susan Collins, I think you'd see a lot of Democrats who really don't see running against her as an enviable task, jumping over to that race and maybe leaving the governor's race a little less, the field on the governor's side a little less developed. So I think you got to watch stuff like that. But I think Jared Golden's running for governor.
I think Susan Collins has a secret weapon with regard to Donald Trump, and that name is Ivanka Trump.
Well, yeah, I think she had a meeting with Elon Musk yesterday. She's going to have to make a lot of decisions on how she approaches the cabinet. Obviously, Hegseth, you know, whether or not he proceeds to a vote, he'll be a tough one. There's going to be some others. She's got a lot of, you know, kind of divergent issues to kind of, you know, to deal with in her own way. She's got the Appropriations Committee that she probably wants to defend a little bit from wholesale efforts to put more authority to spend in the executive branch. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of little pitfalls and some opportunities as well for her. But I think she certainly faces, you know, I don't think any of these either of these threats are particularly large right now. But I think she faces much more of a threat internally than externally. I think she's more likely to be beaten by a Republican ahead of 2026 than a Democrat. That's for sure.
Well, part of the issue here is that once again, and I've talked about this a lot, we revere the Constitution when it works in our favor. But if somebody does something that is constitutional, but we don't like it, then suddenly, you know, they're this, they're that, and the other. The Hegseth nomination uniquely is what the founders envisioned with advice and consent, because the founders did not envision denying someone because of rigid ideology, unless they were an anarchist or a revolutionary or something like that, or loyal to the crown. They didn't envision that. I've gone back and read all those journals over and over and over again. What they envisioned was determining whether the person was of proper character and morals, and, you know, were they capable of doing the job. And before this became the circus that it is in modern America, like so much of our politics, and I've talked about this a lot recently, you know, the nominee would go and sit in a chair outside of the hearing room, and the senators would get together and discuss the person. They would discuss their character, their ethical background, and, you know, were they capable? Did they meet the qualifications of the job? In Hegseth's case, whether fair or whether not, there have been some ethical and moral issues raised. There's no way for me to know whether they're true or not, but there have been issues raised, and we do know that there was a police investigation about a potential sexual assault. He was not charged, and I think that that does matter, but that would certainly be raised. There are people at Fox. I'm aware of things that I cannot say because they were told to me in confidence, but there have been public charges about maybe some inappropriate sexual stuff. Whether true or whether not, I do not know that answer. I haven't been told in confidence that answer. But those are the kinds of things that the founders did anticipate to be discussed, debated, and to be in a determinant as to whether someone should be confirmed or not. That was really about character, morals, ethics, and is the person truly capable of doing the job? You know, I think just because Hegseth has not been in the Washington establishment, that in my mind doesn't disqualify him at all. He's very smart. He went to two Ivy League schools. He's very brave, obviously. He served our nation on the battlefield. Those are all great things, and I think that he could bring a unique perspective to the DOD. But these other issues, which everybody's wound up about, they should be debated and discussed by the Senate, because that is what the founders intended, and that is what the Constitution calls advice and consent.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think you see a lot of tortured logic right around this process every couple of years. And I think Tommy Tuberville said, you know, basically it's not on us to vet the president's candidates this week. Well, you know, it kind of is, right?
Well, it actually is. That's what advice and consent is all about. There is a reason that the president doesn't simply nominate people to a position and then they assume that job. The Constitution gave the Senate the authority to have oversight over these, not over every nomination, but over certain nominations, including
certain ones.
Obviously, the United States Supreme Court.
And I think that there's almost no more important nomination than Secretary of Defense, right?
I'd say top three. I think the Secretary of State's and because we are now a global nation, I think the Secretary of State is incredibly important. And I certainly believe that the Secretary of Treasury is really important as well. A lot of people don't agree with that, but I do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, you know, this is where the military is, right? This person is. I think you're right. I mean, this is the process, and if the Senate just becomes a rubber stamp or whoever, you're not going to like, you know, when the president's and you want that when Donald Trump is in office, you know, you're not going to want that when, you know, the next president comes along from another party. So I think the thing people have to remember in politics is everything that happens, you know, in this Senate will eventually be used against you. And, you know, that's the way Congress has worked for a while. This is, you know, kind of becoming the norm in our politics today.
Yeah, you're right about that. Unfortunately, my friend, we have got to run, but we certainly look forward to next Friday with more insight about what's happening around the state of Maine.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Hey, appreciate it, Mike. Be well this weekend. Mike Shepard, the political editor for the Bangor Daily News. Coming up next, we'll talk with Steve DeMillo. There are a lot of restaurants closing. We'll get Steve's thoughts on it.
I'm Liz Claman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks are slightly to the downside on Wall Street in pre-market trading ahead of the big